Yeah, my son's in trouble. You know, they never addressed the point guard situation, which they definitely needed as a point, and they needed another big body. That's one of the things we talked about at the trade deadline. They need to have those guys, those three guys finishing instead of initiating their offense, and they can play at a much faster pace. Because Minnesota's such a big team, it's tough to score on them in the half court. You got 2 7-foot guys out there, so it's really difficult. So the only way to do that is really speed the tempo up, and they didn't address the point guard situation. They didn't even need a great point guard. They just need a serviceable point guard. And I thought they needed a bigger body. They went out and got Royce O'Neal, who's more of a shooter. But when you're playing against some of the bigger teams in this league, you need more than one big guy, and that's all they got.
That's Charles Barkley the other night on TNT after the Suns lost Game 2 to the Timberwolves 105-93 to fall down 0-2 in the series. And there's very, very much a post-mortem type feel to what Charles Barkley is saying, and a lot of people are using that same tone, like this series is over. The Suns themselves not using that. But what we've seen in two games, we talked about this in great depth yesterday, Bic. On the surface, being down 0-2 and losing two games on the road, not a death sentence for any NBA team. But the optics of the first two games and what was not corrected, what continues to linger in this series, Minnesota, I think, flexed even harder in game two, which is kind of... It gives you a really uneasy feeling about how the rest of this is going to go.
Yeah, listen, there's a couple ways this can go. Tomorrow night is obviously the pivot point. The phrase holding serve, it comes from the sport of tennis. And if you are able to hold serve in a high leverage situation, there's something very studly and very empowering about it. Which is to say, if the Suns can find a way to win both of these home games, it might be exactly the lift that this inconsistent group needs to get to a higher place. Because to win two games would mean a couple of things. It would mean that you would get the better of the Timberwolves, number one. Number two, you take advantage of your home crowd, and B, you would show the sturdiness that you did not show in game two. Mm-hmm. You would show real fortitude. You watch a tennis player when he's serving at 5-6 and he holds serve to force a tiebreaker, the momentum shifts because you did something strong and sturdy under the ultimate amount of pressure. That's what's facing the Suns. If they can hold serve, metaphorically, literally, figuratively, if they can hold serve, they're going to change the complexion of the series entirely. They did this to the Nuggets last year. They came home, won both home games, went back to Denver for game five, and everyone was like, wow, that was something. Now, it didn't work out so well after that. But that's what the Suns have to be looking for. Win a couple of home games, starting with Friday, and then see what that show of sturdiness does do a team like Minnesota. And
let's flip it. I mean, obviously the Suns were up 2-0 in the finals versus the Bucks.
Mm-hmm.
We're up 2-0 versus the Dallas Mavericks.
Same thing.
As soon as the momentum started shifting, completely.
Same thing.
Yes.
So again, and now do I like the Suns' chances? Of course I don't. Not after what I've seen this season, now what I've seen after the first couple of games. But again, we're also talking about a lot of high-end talent here, and the issues with this basketball team isn't necessarily talent. It's you listen to Devin Booker, and when things go to bleep, the team's fragments just like that. That is a real, real, real bad indictment about what has not been built under Frank Vogel the first year. But at the same time, we've seen them on occasion actually communicate well on the court, like that last game against Minnesota of the regular season. And you looked how good this team looked. So I'm not giving up on them. I don't feel good about it. Yeah. They seem to be a broken team. I don't know what the stats are from teams that actually do come down from 0-2 to win a series. I'm guessing it's less than 10%.
It's not high.
Couldn't be.
It's
right?
Not high. Which is kind of amazing when you think about it. But, you know, and I agree with you. I'm not giving up. I'm not calling this series over. Again, what we've seen so far is discouraging, and the second part of it is discouraging. The second game was especially discouraging because, you know, they called game one a feel-out game. Mm-hmm. Let's feel it out. And then what they felt, they didn't change. The ingredients didn't change. The Suns talk about this all the time.
What's the magic number to get to an assist? 30. They've been under 20 assists in back-to-back games. They've been under 100 points in back-to-back games. They didn't change anything they did. Now, Minnesota's defense is very good. I still am of the belief good offense beats good defense.
It always does.
That's why these guys are getting paid $35, $40, $50 million is because they are dynamic offensive players, and we haven't seen it. Zach Lowe, NBA Today on ESPN, talked about what the Timberwolves' defense is doing to the Suns.
Well, look, I mean, the overarching story of the series is this is the best defensive team in the league. Minnesota, they're huge, they're giant, and Phoenix has absolutely nothing going offensively. Their offensive rating through two games is 99 points per 100 possessions. Look at these possessions. Half the time they're on it, and then half the time the Suns look like they just met each other yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at, you know, and I've made a couple jokes about this series since it started. Watching the Orlando Magic try to operate their offense against a good Cleveland defense right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's ugly to watch. You kind of understand it, though. Orlando's a young team. This shouldn't be happening to the Suns. All due respect to Jaden McDaniels, who might be the best player on the court through two games, saying something.
Series MVP so far. He is. You're absolutely right.
But, I mean, for the fact that the Suns are having that much difficulty offensively, go back to the beginning of the year. And there was this ultra-confident air about the Phoenix Suns. And I remember Devin Booker talking about it on Media Day. He's like, how are you going to guard us?
Yeah.
Who are you going to double?
Yeah.
Minnesota's not doubling anybody.
Nobody was the answer.
And apparently. The ball is not moving, and there's no shot. The other thing that's plaguing the Suns, too, they are reverting back to playing old-school mid-range basketball. They're not shooting enough threes.
So true. That was on my list of things to bring up today, that they've actually reverted to shooting less three-point shots. And toward the end of the season, Frank Vogel was imploring them, shoot more. Led to that game where they looked ridiculous, where they put up 20 in the first quarter, and people thought, are you guys even trying? Is this like a scrimmage to you? Is this a joke? Right, and but so this has not only been a work in progress, this has been a not work in progress.
You want a stat, Vic?
Yeah.
Last night, the Miami Heat made 23 three-pointers against the Boston Celtics.
Mm-hmm.
That's one more three-pointer than the Suns attempted in Game 2.
Whoops. Mm.
Through 16 playoff games this year, the Suns have the lowest and the third lowest total of three-point shots attempted in a game.
And a lot of that is because they're just playing a lot more one-on-one.
Yes,
and when they do that, they shoot mid-rangers. And
to
answer your question, it's 7.3% of NBA teams have come back from 0-2.
7.3%.
So you're right, less than 10%.
Pinning our hopes to 7.3.
Yeah, and here's
number seven.
Here's another stat, courtesy of Doug Howler in The Athletic, real quick. Entering the season, Frank Vogel lost Game 1 in the playoff series 9 of 15 times. 8 of those 9 times he has lost Game 1, he's rebounded to win Game 2. His teams have rebounded to win Game 2, which would suggest he's very good at making adjustments. Now, I think what the Suns did to adjust to Anthony Edwards was excellent. But I think that if you're making a list of things that might sabotage this basketball team, if point guard is number 1, number 2 is very likely hiring a defensive coach to coach a offensive-minded team. That might be, when we look back on this season, that might be fatal flaw number 2.
Yeah, you might be right. We'll have more Suns talk later on in the show. Also want to remind you, you can join Arizona Sports 98.7 tonight. Round 1 of the NFL draft at Flanker's Kitchen inside BetMGM Sportsbook. Come witness Cardinals history with us. Get a chance to win some autographed Cardinals merchandise. Visit the contest page at arizonasports.com for full details on the evening's event. Coming up next, we'll get more into the draft and, more into what teams could complicate things in the top 5 and how that could affect the Arizona Cardinals this evening. That's next here on Bickley & Murata Mornings, Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
It's Gambo. The day has finally arrived. The NFL draft. What will the Cardinals do in the first round? Join us as we'll be broadcasting live from the BetMGM Sportsbook on the great lawn of State Farm Stadium from 2 until the end of the first round of the draft on Arizona Sports.
Quite honestly, I believe it takes a turn right at number 2 as soon as Chicago is off the clock. I think right there is where the intrigue for me starts. And look, I heard what Kimberly Martin said about Adam Peterson saying, look, we've decided on who we're going to take. I'm interested to hear who that's going to be.
Yeah.
And really, after they make that pick, I'm even still interested to hear about the process by which they arrived at whoever it is that they take. Because to me, my instinct tells me there isn't this 100% consensus about it being Jaden Daniels, although I have said that would be number one for me. But I think that's where it starts. And then obviously, as Adam alluded to, at number three, it gets even more interesting because there's this draft really is, I don't want to say top heavy, but it is deep, man. It is deep with players who play premium impact positions that are all going to have tremendous careers. So really at two, from there, buckle in, man, because then it gets good.
That's Lewis Riddick from ESPN. Starts at two. He's not sold on Jaden Daniels to Washington. I wouldn't say I'm sold.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the way it's going to go. Three could be interesting with New England. They're going to get a ton of phone calls.
Yeah.
We are agreed on that, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Patriots could really shape this whole thing. Mike Reese, who covers the Patriots for ESPN, he talks about the possibilities the Patriots have at number three when the draft gets underway tonight.
A Patriot source telling me our legacies will be tied to what we decide at quarterback. I'm told they're operating with the mindset that unless you have a long-term answer at the position, you can't win. This is unfamiliar territory for the Patriots, picking third overall, the highest pick in owner Robert Kraft's 31-year tenure, why he's called it the most anticipated draft of his time. And one last thing, the Patriots are listening to trade offers, but head coach Gerard Mayo says it would take a bag for them to move the pick. And as of last check-in, no bag has arrived here in Foxborough.
Yeah, and then you have to look at the possibility teams that are currently outside the top five, Minnesota, the Giants, teams that the rumors are hot and heavy now that both of those teams want to move up to get their quarterback.
I got some updated from my guy in New York. My guy in New York told me last night, for what it's worth, that this is, I wouldn't call this an A-plus source, but this is a guy dialed into the New York media, that internally the belief is the Giants are backing away from a quarterback.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Well, we may be wrong, but we'll see.
They're going to put their belief behind Bug-Eye Jones again?
I think they've come to the realization that we don't like who is going to be available enough for us to take him at six or consider moving up. But again, maybe wrong, but this is the same source that told me they had spent inordinate amounts of time scouting and researching the position. But now they've come to the word is they've come to the realization this is not for us.
Yeah.
So this is where it's all going to get interesting because there may or may not be demand, right? If you take a look at what the Patriots do, if the Patriots do not draft a quarterback and actually trade out of that, I guarantee you tomorrow morning these rumors of Tom Brady are going to blow up. As in, what are you doing? Now, again, Jacoby Brissett's not a bad quarterback. He's not a bad guy to go into a season with. But you're not winning anything with him.
He's not your plan.
No, he's not your plan. He's a stopgap.
Yes.
He's a perfect guy to have if you are drafting a young quarterback. The perfect guy to have. But he's gone through that a number of times in his career.
This goes back to what you were saying earlier, though, about being desperate enough to just draft at a position regardless of if you love the person or not.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Patriots could know that they absolutely need a quarterback, but they might only love Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels. And if those two guys are off the board, do you just take a quarterback to take a quarterback?
That's where you get into trouble. But then if you don't, then how do you build hope in among your team and your fan base? It's really a catch 22. Here's the other
Drake May, I have no idea what teams think of him. He seems to be like not having a lot of buzz at all this whole offseason.
And yet he was considered to be 1B after and for most of the regular season.
Yeah, it's true.
Here's the other thing that dawned on me in preparation for tonight. We know that ESPN, the network, has brought a lot of cool sound effects to the world of sports.
Yes.
Da-da-da, da-da-da. But how the draft sounder, I heard that yesterday. It is so familiar now. Yes. Well done, Vinny. That right there.
We're announcing a
trade.
You know
exactly what that means. If you played that in the middle of October, you'd be like, who's on the clock? The pick's in? Wow. It's November. The draft's a few. Right. It triggers something.
That kind of gave me some.
Exactly.
Some
you're like, oh, the pick's in. Focus.
That's almost as recognizable as the sound of my one of two alarms that go off every morning that remind me no matter what state I'm in, oh, no, I'm waking up again. We're going to do this again.
Oh, no. I didn't expire overnight. When is this going to end? Again. When is this ever going to end?
All right, life. I don't like you, and you don't like me. But let's get through this thing.
Right, right.
So I can start killing you with beer.
Exactly. Then the question becomes, okay, so what are the Cardinals going to look at? I was talking to another scout friend of mine, and he said, if you were the Arizona Cardinals, you're looking for a defensive end slash pass rusher, a linebacker, a safety, two cornerbacks, a guard, and at least two wide receivers.
Is that all?
That's your list. This is just the information given to me. That would be a shopping list of what you're looking at. Sky also said that if you get Marvin Harrison Jr. in round one, stop rubbing! If you get Marvin Harrison...
At least make it clear it was his eyes.
Yes, it was his eyes. Right, right. I was referring to a Twitter exchange between him and Vinny that I had just heard about that was rather hysterical.
Tremendous.
There are other wide receivers you can get lower for your second wide receiver, and a couple names that were given me. Javier Leggette, wide receiver out of South Carolina, guy you got to keep your eye on. Malachi Corley, receiver out of Western Kentucky. These are picks to click, if you will. Don't say I never gave you anything.
Yeah, but I mean,
this is the Bickley Five.
Are the Cardinals of the belief that one of those guys can develop into a WR1?
No, but don't.
According to this scout, Brennan Jackson is a defensive end you might want to look at. Max Crosby kind of motor. Dude out of Washington State. I'm loaded with information today.
Look at you.
Look at me. Booker! Baker!
I think you've just replaced Mel Kiper as the draft analyst with the best hair.
I have. Yeah.
Hey, your widow's peak hasn't moved 70 degrees across their head.
Yeah.
Yeah, it all starts tonight. 5 o'clock is when Roger Goodell will get booed by the crowd in Detroit and then hand things off to the Chicago Bears. And not long after that, the Arizona Cardinals will be on the clock, we think, at number 4. A lot could change between now and then. Coming up next, all the big stories on this Thursday morning presented in the Rush Hour Reboot by Sarah Cazell. It's Bickley and Marotta Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Bickley and Marotta Mornings. Rush Hour Reboot. Rush Hour Reboot. Getting you up to speed on everything happening in sports this morning. Brought to you by Brooklyn Betting. Arizona built for America's dreams.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome into the Rush Hour Reboot here on Bickley and Marotta Mornings on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Let's get you caught up on everything you want to know in Valley sports today, which is heavily focused on the Cardinals and the NFL draft. I'm Sarah Cazell with Dan Bickley.
Hey.
With Vince Marotta.
Yes. Love it.
And Jarrett Carlin.
We'll tell you about the butt next.
That's right. And you did. You followed up on that butt.
We did a whole segment talking about butt. We'll tell you about the butt next.
Okay, let's jump in.
Let's do it.
The NFL draft starts tonight in Detroit. 5 o'clock start Arizona time for the first round. Though, as I've been saying, I mean, we're just talking NFL draft all day long. So just be with us all day long. How about that? Here on Arizona Sports. The Cardinals.
Tune us in and rip off the knob.
Yeah.
Remember when radios had knobs?
Yeah.
Dial.
The Cardinals have 2 picks in the first round right now, number 4 and number 27. They have 11 total picks in this draft. Obviously, we've been talking about Marvin Harrison Jr. at number 4 for months and months and months now, though there is always the possibility of trading back. Last week, Cardinals GM Monty Austinfort was asked if he knows if he's going to stay at 4 or if he's going to trade back.
I have an idea, yeah. But I think really when that gets firmed up here is going to be over the next week as we talk through these scenarios. I think up until this point and up until the next couple hours when we polish out that last 5%, I think it's about getting our board right. And it's getting comfortable with where both vertically and horizontally guys are on our board. And once we get through that point, then we can start talking about what different opportunities may or may not mean.
And here's ESPN's Adam Schefter. He said just 3 days ago on the Pat McAfee show that for the right price, the number 4 pick is available.
Pick is for sale, but no sales are final until they're on the clock. And even then, I think 4 is going to be a tough spot to get to for some teams. I just don't know in the end that Arizona is going to be willing to give up the chance to get the top wide receiver in this draft to move out of that spot to get extra picks.
Okay. The odds from FanDuel Sportsbook overwhelmingly point to Marvin Harrison Jr. going to the Cardinals at fourth overall.
Mm-hmm.
But if the Cardinals do not end up with him, you will feel blank.
I will feel shame.
I will feel conflicted.
I can only halfway answer that question because what do they end up with?
Yeah. Either way, I would feel conflicted because it is the quality versus quantity argument. It's leaving a potential generational piece on the board. You know, the last time the Cardinals had the number four overall pick in the NFL draft, they selected a wide receiver. Bobby Moore out of Oregon became Michael Jordan's lapdog, better known as Ahmad Rashad.
His lapdog.
He became his media consigliere.
That is true. Had a pretty good career.
Just he sure
with,
did.
Not with the Cardinals, though.
No.
Yeah.
Okay, so Vince, it sounds like there's a price for you. You want to know what else they would end up with to be okay with it.
I want a top flight receiver with their first pick in the draft.
Okay.
But if it's not, I want Harrison. If it's not Harrison, I'll feel marginally disappointed.
Yeah. Okay. Marginally disappointed. There we are. Yeah. Okay. Now, if they stay at four and they hold on to that number 27 pick later in the first round, there are a few different guys, depending on which mock you read, who are mocked to go to the Cardinals. The Athletic's Dane Brugler has the Cardinals taking Jared Verse, the edge out of Florida State, at 27. ESPN's Field Yates has the Cardinals grabbing Iowa corner Cooper DeJean. And Bleacher Report has them taking Penn State edge Chop Robinson. Of those three, do you have a preference, or is there another name that you're like, oh, I really hope this guy is available at 27?
Individually, I've been intrigued by all three of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Verse was talked about going way higher during when this process started, and I think he's got a lot of potential. Chop just because of the name.
Yeah,
and
how can you not?
I think Cooper DeJean's got a great story, too.
Mm-hmm.
And he is just filled with... He's so confident.
How confident is he?
Cooper DeJean?
He claimed he can beat Caitlin Clark one-on-one in basketball. Both Iowa people, so maybe they can make it happen.
Wow.
You got to love that confidence. So, yeah, I'm intrigued by all three of those guys, actually.
Yeah, me too.
And all areas of need, obviously.
Sure. Okay, I want to run this past you guys. In the last 30 minutes, Daniel Jeremiah threw this out on Twitter. I was asked this question. What is the wildest top 10 rumor? Here you go. And it involves the Cardinals. Minnesota trades from 11 to 3 with New England. New England then trades from 11 to 4 with Arizona. Arizona then trades from 11 to 5 with the Chargers. Are you dizzy yet? He says. So it would be at 3, Drake May going to Minnesota. At 4, J.J. McCarthy going to New England. At 5, Marvin Harrison Jr. going to the Cardinals. And then at 11, who knows? He just puts a question mark with the Chargers. How would you feel about that?
I'm with Charles Davis on this. When mock drafts start invoking trades, multiple trades, you've lost me.
Yeah.
And now we've gotten past we've crossed the Rubicon.
Because then it becomes too hypothetical.
How do you know? Way too hypothetical.
How do you know? It's not best on information. It's best on hypotheticals.
Okay.
No, it's exactly true. And so many guys so many people are doing mock drafts now. They'll throw the trades in there, and they do it just haphazardly. They don't explain what's going where, and it gets very, very confusing.
I had a listener reach out to me and say, mock drafts are nothing but mock entertainment. When you start invoking trades, then I think...
Fair enough.
You're right.
Fair enough. All right.
He's right.
On that note, let's get to the Coyotes. I know some of y'all don't want to hear about it, but we do need to cover that they arrived in Salt Lake City yesterday to be introduced as Utah to Utah. They had a welcome party at Delta Center where they will start playing this fall. The building was packed. Energy was high. Some players from the Utah Jazz were there, and they just really went all out to welcome the team. Andre Tourney spoke to the media yesterday. He said he was totally blown away by their reception.
Arriving here today and seeing all the reception and everything got organized for us to see the building and the facility and the kids at the airport, everything has been amazing, first class, with a lot of enthusiasm. It made us feel home already. It feel like we already want to fight for Utah. So that's I'm blown away right now.
He also shared that he told his wife, "I think this is the best day of my NHL career."
That part
so
hurt.
Yeah.
When I read that, that actually, I did that. Ugh.
Yeah. So what all did you think about what you saw from Salt Lake City?
Number one, he's got to say that. He wants to keep his job. Number two, I'm sure he does feel like, wow, look at this embrace we're getting. And then I'm sure he got a different vibe from that owner than he did his previous owner. So I think all of that kind of is in play a little bit here. But I like the analogy Vinny made yesterday that it's like getting divorced with somebody or breaking up with somebody, and now your ex is with somebody within a week, and they're way too far down the road. You know, something must have been cooking prior.
Yeah.
That's what this feels like.
Yes. I agree with Bick. Hearing Andre Tourigny say that, it was like, oof.
Yeah.
You can't, I mean, they were made a big deal of. They haven't been made a big deal of
in Arizona, Coach.
For quite some time. And you talked about that different vibe getting an owner. I'm happy for Andre Tourigny because I'm pretty sure he met the owner of this franchise for the first time yesterday.
Yeah.
Do we know what the Salt Lake City hockey team's social media presence is going to be like? Is it going to be like...
like an owner's son?
All over the place?
You would really
Ryan
expect...
Smith have a son?
You would really expect Andre Tourigny to say, this is my best day in the NHL. Of course, those interviews with Luke Lipinski. Oh. What could ever replace those, Jarrett?
I wonder who... Yeah, who is the Utah Luke Lipinski? Oh, my... What a combo that would be. Talk about lightning in a bottle, huh?
By the way, the finalists for the names, we mentioned this earlier.
Yes.
Mammoth, Yetis,
Yeti,
Blizzard, Utah Hockey Club, Venom.
The Venom.
Outlaws, Ice, and Fury. Let's just pick all the names of the American gladiators and put them up for a vote.
And lots of them without S's at the end, huh?
Yeah.
One of those.
Yeah.
Deals.
Well,
not
I guess
one
that was intentional, right?
Double Z's, which used to be like a law in the state of Utah. You had to name all your teams with Z's.
Very snazzy.
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah.
The Utah Snaz.
I guess double Z and Blizzard, but not at the end. That's what I thought you meant.
Yes.
A little Fletch reference right there. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, Sarah.
Rush Hour Reboot
thank you.
Every morning with Sarah Cazell at 7:30. Coming up next, we will talk D-backs baseball with the president and CEO of the club. Derek Hall joins us for his weekly visit next here on Bickley and Murata Mornings, Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Mr. Speaker, the president.
The president.
I have the high privilege and distinct honor to present to you the president.
He's the president and CEO of your Arizona Diamondbacks.
Hail to the chief.
Derek Hall.
The president.
On Now with Bickley and Murata. Brought to you by All Pro Shade Concepts. Visit allproshade.com to schedule your free estimate on motorized awnings or roll down shades. Stay cool with All Pro Shade Concepts.
Yeah, the president and CEO of the Diamondbacks, Derek Hall, joins us right now on the Arizona Sports Line. Good morning, Derek. How are you?
Good morning, guys. I'm
Derek.
Doing okay. I'm at the nation's capital for Make-A-Wish America board meeting. Nice. So it's ironic. We're staying at the Watergate Hotel,
wow.
Which during an election year like this, it just seems strange to be here. But
don't illegally tape anybody, Derek.
No recordings here, Ben.
No recordings. Yeah, right. Exactly.
We would like to wish our sincere congratulations to the Diamondbacks organization for reaching the one-day mark of not having to put anybody on the injured list. That's pretty
goodness.
Cool.
Yeah, well. And it's an off day, which is good, although yesterday felt like an off day, too, the way we played. But you're right. I mean, it's, you know, you look at the injured list and, you know, when you have 10 or 11 players and really significant players, mm-hmm. when you look and you now have Kelly and you've had Thomas and Perdomo and Sewald and Rodriguez, and it just keeps going. But I guess, Vince, it's good to get these out of the way early part of the season. Yet, you know, here we are almost May and we've got to get our team back in order.
There's so much talk about pitcher injuries, especially the Diamondbacks. Have, I believe, 8 pitchers on the injured list right now, varying lengths on those injury reports. And there's all these theories on what's going on. I'd love to know at the higher levels of baseball what you and your colleagues around the sport think about this. Is it an increase? Do the numbers bear that out? Is it just coincidence? I mean, what is being talked about on the front of injuries to pitchers?
Well, there's a lot of talk for sure, and we're trying to figure out what it is. I don't think, like you and I talked about before. I don't think it's the pitch clock. I think now we're so focused on velocity. That's the theory that I see more and more of. Young kids are just trying to get their velo up, and they're going in the off season, and they're going to places where you're just working on getting that velocity up, and it's about throwing every pitch hard. Even the off-speed pitches are much firmer than they were in the past. So maybe that has something to do with it. There's theories about the weighted ball. We're just not sure, but obviously we're going to try and get to the bottom of it and keep these guys healthy, but it is more and more. Maybe it's coincidence because we are seeing so many the last year or two, but I do think something has to do with the velocity, and everybody's focused on what the miles per hour are.
All right, as somebody who was absolutely riveted by Merrill Kelly in last year's postseason, I am gutted by the news about his shoulder. What are your thoughts about this? Is there a glimmer of hope that this is going to be short term? And if not, how do you guys survive a potential loss like that?
Yeah, it's tough to overcome, but I do have a glimmer of hope, and I think I think he's going to be okay. I mean, he knows his body, he knows his arm and his shoulder, and if you felt something that didn't feel quite right, he shut it down. Now, the problem is anytime you shut down throwing, which is what Torrey alluded to yesterday and the day before, if you close down your throwing, now you've got to ramp it back up. So it sets back the time necessary to get back on the field and back on the mound. When you just completely shut down, now you've got to slowly get back, and you got to get your pitch count back up, and you got to throw on flat ground, and then you got to face live batting, mm-hmm. and then you got to go rehab start. So it does take time. I mean, look at Eduardo right now. We're still waiting on Rodriguez, and we're looking at maybe the end of May, maybe beginning of June, a very similar situation because he had to stop throwing. So that's an issue. But just think where we would be if we hadn't gone out and gotten Montgomery.
Agreed.
And, even yesterday, like you guys talked about earlier, he really is a throwback pitcher. I mean, this guy is, he's a pro, right? And there were innings where it looked he was under. Found a way to get out of it, and he ends up going seven innings, and I think he threw just 87 pitches. So it's good that we do have the depth, and we've created that depth, and knowing that Ryan Nelson is there, and look at what Tommy Henry did the other night, and looked like he was going to have a rough night in the first inning, and he just completely shut him down after that. So having the depth is a luxury, and I am happy about that. But the sooner we could get those guys back, Dick, I mean, you look at what we were trying to create with a rotation that would have been and should be, Gallen and Montgomery and Kelly and Rodriguez and Pott. You could put that up against any rotation in baseball and say it might be the best.
Derek Hall, President and CEO of the Diamondbacks, our guest every Thursday here on Bickley and Marotta Mornings. There's been a lot of early season discussion, as you know, Derek, about Corbin Carroll's second year struggles. And look, the numbers don't jump off the page to you. It has been a struggle, but Torrey's talked about it too. He can feel Corbin Carroll pressing right now. I'm wondering what the organizational discussions about Corbin Carroll are. Where is the confidence level, or on the other side of that, where is the concern level about Corbin right now?
Yep, great question, Vinny. And I think concern is not that high. I mean, obviously, we're not used to seeing these numbers. And I do think he's put a lot of pressure on himself. And I also think he never stopped. I mean, he went very long season, and he was very busy in the off season, and he was working out each and every day. Again, we're joking about today being an off day, but I do think it's a good time for it. And Torrey, I agree with him, what he said yesterday after the game. They're tired. And, they just played 13 straight games and 19 out of 20. And when you look at this road trip, and it's not just Corbin, it's all of them. You can see them dragging at times, but having to go, it's an odd schedule, but having to go from home to go up to San Francisco and play four, then you go over to St. Louis, then you go back to Seattle, then come back home. And by the way, it doesn't get any easier. I mean, you look at the next 15 games and we're playing, I keep looking at it, but we've got the Dodgers coming in, we got the Padres coming in, then you go to Cincinnati, you go to Baltimore, and then you come back to Cincinnati again. It just doesn't get any easier. But I think a lot of the guys are pressing. And when you do have certain members of your team on the IL, like Thomas and Perdomo, and you're trying to pick up for them, you're trying to do too much and carry the team. But I don't worry about someone like Corbin. And the internal talk that you asked about is we're really not worried about him because he is such a player and he's such a talent. He's going to turn it around. We know that. But he just needs to take a little pressure off himself. Giving him a night off the other night was a good thing. Moving him around the order, whatever it takes. But we're going to see the old Corbin back there soon. We know that.
I hope you're right. Lastly, your nucleus of young players, they're very serious. They're walk by the hotel bar, grab a couple of bottles of water, and go up to study on their laptops kind of team. What would explain, or what are some of the theories why you guys are so good offensively early in games and then sort of get off the gas pedal a little bit?
Yeah, you guys talking about it the other day, and you might be right. I mean, Vic, you and Vinny were talking about perhaps we're too focused on the starting pitcher and break down, and I don't know, but we have to become more consistent and not just, tacking on all those runs in one inning or two innings. And the other thing is just, it's got to be more than just every other day or every 2 days. And it just seems like you score 14 like we did two nights. You come out and you score one the next day. This is a good ball club. It's a very good team, and they do have the ability to tack on runs. We just have to be a lot more consistent. I think sometimes they right away and put off the gas a little bit. We can't do that. We've got to keep going for the throat. And I think when we have all our reinforcements back and we've got our lineup going each and every day, a lot of that, Vic, is changing the lineup, looking at matchups, because you have so many guys from minors expect to be here on the run. Now, when we get our guys back and you have more of a consistent lineup, you're going to see more consistent play. I really do believe that. And especially when you look at our bullpen, the roles, that's going to help as well. But from an offensive standpoint, I don't really worry about the team. I just want to see more consistency, that's for sure. Yeah.
Derek, thanks so much for the time and the insight. As always, we'll talk to you next week.
You got it, guys. Look forward to it. Thank you, as always.
Thank you, Derek Hall, President and CEO of the Arizona Diamondbacks, calling in from Washington, D.C. this morning here on the Arizona Sports Line. Coming up next, a special Thursday NFL draft day. No, it's not going to be about that. It is going to be
Fire!
The Bickley Blast. Fire! It's Bickley and Murata mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.